I'm Laura Fola. I work at the Greensboro Science Center.
Hello, I'm John Rossi. I'm a touring drummer with a passion for animal conservation. When I'm on the road, I spend as much time as possible visiting zoos, aquariums, and conservation organizations. Now, I want to share those places with you. I'll be talking to keepers, vets, conservationists, anyone who can help me in my mission of connecting my people to animals through their people. Join me on my raw safari. Hello. Hi. Hello. Welcome back to the Raw Safari Podcast. So y'all, as you know, we have cultivated quite an incredible relationship with the Greensboro Science Center. And you have heard from so many people there, be it keepers or aquarists or obviously, you know, Becca in PR, who just loves diving into these episodes. Spoiler alert, she dives into this one as well. And it has just been such a joy to develop such an amazing relationship with a wonderful facility like Greensboro Science Center. And the thing that I think I love the most about it from a podcastal perspective is the fact that by spending so much time at one facility, you really get to hear all of the amazing different things that happen at that facility, like day in and day out. Because today you're going to be hearing about a bunch of animals at the zoo that you have not heard about yet at Greensboro, and some that you haven't heard about at all. You're even going to get to come with me to meet some of those animals after the main interview, and I'm pretty excited to be able to share all of that with you. But the crazy thing about it to me is that today you're going to be hearing from Laura, and Laura's going to be telling you all about the animals that she takes care of and her path to a career at Greensboro and all of those things. And when Laura's working, a lot of the time, so is Kelly, who you heard last episode, and Jen, who you heard last episode. So is Lizzie, and Mike, and Macy, and Becca, and all of these amazing people. And they're all there taking care of the animals that you've heard about on here before, like Monty and Bianca, the Bentlets, right? Or like the red panda cubs, Miso, Zuko, Azula, and all of the parents, right? There's Ty, there's Usha, there's Minowai, there's Susan. We've gone and met Hermione, the hornbill. We've obviously spent time with Bakari, the okapi, who proved that okapi are real to me. And of course, there are the pygmy hippos that you've heard about. And all of these incredible animals and people are all at the same place at the same time. And that's not even touching on the amazing people in the aquarium that you heard from. And I really love being able to keep going back to this facility and sharing all of the amazing people and animals really in depth. And then to step back and think, like, this is all happening at the same time, at the same place. Every one of these stories, which is worth investing an hour or more of our time into, is happening simultaneously, day in and day out. And that's how it is at Greensboro, but that's how it is at all of these amazing facilities that I feature on here. It really blows my mind to stop and think about that, and I love to be able to share that with all of you. So before we get to the interview, a quick reminder to make sure that you hit subscribe, make sure that you follow along on socials at Raw Safari, make sure that you are following along on TikTok at Raw Safari Pod, and don't forget that there's a Patreon where you can go and support the pod, patreon.com/Raw Safari. Starts for as little as $3 a month, not too shabby. And like I mentioned briefly a moment ago, at the end of the interview proper, you're going to hear my transition music, and then you're going to hear me standing with Laura right at the Javan Gibbon Habitat. And then after that, you're going to hear me walk in and get to witness a very special training session with a very cool animal. I'm going to leave that a secret for now, but definitely have not had anything like it on the podcast yet. And I'm excited for y'all to hear what happens, including a bit of a training breakthrough that happens while I'm there, actually. It's really exciting stuff. So without further ado, here is my interview with Laura Fola of the Greensboro Science Center.
As a lead keeper, I'm the lead keeper over the Javan Gibbons, the Fusa, and the Caribbean Flamingos.
Nice. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very cool. And I'm really excited to talk about the new Fusa.
Yes.
So we will get to that in a little bit. But I always start off by asking kind of what your history is. Like, why are you a keeper now? And you know, when you were a kid, were you into animals? Did you always want this path? Tell me your journey.
Yeah, I think I could solidly say since I was like 3, at least, it was literally always zookeeper. It's nice. Never changed. I feel like it's kind of that lame origin story that everyone's like, since I was a little girl, I wanted to be a zookeeper. But that's kind of how it is.
It's actually really funny. So in my experience, talking to a whole lot of you, it's actually really rare.
Really?
What most of it is people think they want to be vets and don't even know that zookeeper is an option.
Interesting.
Growing up has been like, I've literally joked that I need to make a like parody song about that or something about the fact that everybody wants to be a vet. And then someday they're like, wait, I don't want to do the medical stuff, or like, I don't want whatever. And then they're like, wait, you can be a zoo. You can feed the animals and take care. Oh, that's cool.
that makes me feel a lot better about it.
Yours is actually, it's a pretty rare thing to hear that, honestly.
Okay, so, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like younger, like Googling 10 years old, how much I would make, seeing that back then, I mean, it was like under $20,000. Like it was really small. And I was like, you know what? That's fine. I don't need it. I'm just going to be a zookeeper and it's going to be great. And I would tell everybody, I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's all about the conservation and the animals. So I've always like grown up with that kind of like passion for it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that has really, I mean, it's guided every decision I've made to get here.
Yeah. How so? Tell me about it. That's cool.
Yeah. So there, I went to originally UNC Pembroke. There's only 2 universities that have zoological degrees specifically in North Carolina. So it was UNC Pembroke and NC State. And I was like, I'm not smart enough to get into state. So I was like, Pembroke, it is. So I started out there. I was really determined to get that degree. And then for me personally, I kind of realized that school is not necessarily my strong suit, and that I really wanted to get into the work field quicker. Mm-hmm. And so I had heard a lot of rumblings about the zoo and aquarium science at Davidson Davie Community College from my mom, primarily her wanting me to spend less money on school. So I actually left UNC Pembroke after about 2.5 years, and then I went to Davidson Davie, and I did the ZAS program. And for me, what that gave me was the internship experience, which really solidified, I mean, if you think about it, 20 years of like, this is what I want to do. This is where I'm supposed to be kind of thing. And finally having that one step of like your first internship, you walk in the doors, you're doing these things that you've always dreamt about. For me, it was like, yes, this is where I'm meant to be. I'm going to do everything I can to get there kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I worked really hard. I ended up doing a total of 3 internships, and I was hired out of my 3rd one here, which I was really fortunate about, that the position came open and I was able to apply. And then I've been here since.
Cool. So let's pause there for a second, because I noticed that that is a trend here, that the Greensboro Science Center seems to have a lot of former interns that are working here, which I think is really cool. You know, I feel like everyone thinks of an internship as a gateway to the field.
Yeah.
But at Greensboro, an internship can often be a gateway to a job.
Yes.
Where you are. And I think that's really cool and really important. What were your internships? Like, where were you at the center? What were you doing during those?
I actually first interned with our Tiger String at the time. The Tiger String was with Carolyn, who's now our assistant curator. And that had the tigers and then the howler monkeys, and it had a coati and fishing cat. So I had a really awesome kind of arrangement. And then, my second internship, I was doing all this during COVID, so they were very considerate of our schooling needs and the internships that we needed, and they allowed us to come back for a second time. That's not necessarily something that our program currently is in line with, just as we're trying to give more people the experience.
Makes sense to me.
But during COVID, there was not a lot of internships available. People were really restricted based off of their animal safety. So I came back as the penguin otter intern. And I'm really passionate about breeding and reproduction in these facilities. And so at the time, obviously our penguins have a really big breeding program. So that was like a really big deal for me to get on that.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. I like that a lot. And so then when you got hired, what was your first string as a baby keeper?
I was actually a relief keeper.
Okay.
The position titles used to be a little different. So I guess I would have been a swing.
Okay.
Back then we didn't have our teams. So I was a swing keeper. I covered honestly primarily every string. I think there was maybe one at the time that I didn't know. But I still managed to help in all the areas. And then after, I think it was about 5 months, I was moved into a lead position.
Wow. That's not a lot of time. Although I guess if you consider the internships,
yes,
it is. That's really cool. That I guess those really paid off for you then.
Yeah, I really That's do cool. think those experiences are valuable. And putting in your best effort as much as like you can in all the time that people watch you, I think that's really important.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's very, very cool. So, you've seen a lot of change here
from what
you're saying. Yeah.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that and going to the team structure and all of that?
I definitely think that change is hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think in any work environment, change can be really difficult for, just a group of people to go through in general. I think that one thing that I've really enjoyed about being a part of all of the change, I mean, I was here before Revolution Ridge, and then I was here during the building of it, the quarantine period for the animals, all to where we are now. And then there's obviously been a lot of change in the middle of that. I think that this facility really tries to embrace change. And I think that has to also go with my coworkers as well, is obviously, again, it's hard, but we really try our best to like, okay, we're going to roll with the punches and this is happening. Mm-hmm. You can't stop a boulder down a mountain.
Right.
So you kind of have to run with it if you don't want to get trampled. And I think that's something that's really actually like a key thing in my career is that it really stressed me out in the beginning because you're new. You're like, I don't have this experience that everybody else has. Oh my God, what am I doing? They're telling me to do this big thing. And I think that after like kind of compartmentalizing and working with some more senior staff, I was able to realize that like, I don't need to beat the change. I just need to go with it and find the positive avenues out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this facility, the Science Center, really does help in finding those positive avenues.
That's really cool. That's really important. I like that. That's, I totally get that. Change is tricky. I've always been a person who is just built to roll with whatever.
Yeah.
And, it took me a long time and working with a lot of friends with like anxiety and stuff.
Yes.
to understand, that, you know, that's okay. And
yes.
that, you know, it's not easy for everyone. Cause no. I'm just like, okay, cool. Now we're doing this. Okay, cool.
I
now
wish.
We're doing that. And, you know, I mean, my main job is that I'm a touring musician. And so like, it's a different thing every day. And you walk into a venue and they're like, oh, hey, we don't have enough room for the set. And mm-hmm. also the show has to be 10 minutes shorter. So we're changing this, go.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, what are we doing tomorrow? It's like, I don't think I ever fully appreciated until I started talking to other people how like stressful that can be for people.
Yes, for sure.
So that's good that you have learned that. And also I think it's cool that the center helps with that, you know.
Yeah, I do too, honestly.
Yeah, that's very cool. All right. So there are a bunch of animals that you work with.
Oh, yeah.
And first, I have to ask you a very important trivia question.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry. This is not, it's just me being silly. But I recently learned this on an episode with the FUSA SSP that they did an episode. And so some people say FASA.
Oh, gosh.
Some people say FUSA. I'm not going to ask you about which is right or wrong because they're both right.
Yes, they are both right.
Do you know the common term for the FUSA in like England?
Like their name?
Yeah. Like they don't say FASA or FUSA. Really? They call it a FOOSH.
No.
I am obsessed with this. This is like my favorite trivia fact now.
Foosh?
I've started referring to them as FOOSH. I don't know where this comes from, but I learned this and it brings me such joy. So like when Becca the other day was like, hey, let's go down and like, I'll show you the new FUSA. And I was like, the new FOOSH. Ah! It just makes me really happy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I have not heard of that at all.
Yeah. It's just one of those things.
That is a fun fact.
I thought you'd appreciate it. Yeah.
I do really appreciate that, actually.
Yeah. So tell me all about the new FOOSH.
The new FOOSH. I personally say FUSA FUSA. Every time I type it out, I accidentally type FUSA FUSA.
Nice.
Anytime I write it, same thing. I don't know why. That's my version.
Well, and that is their, isn't that their like scientific name, or am I remembering wrong? I know some species are
Cryptopharafoxa.
Like that.
Oh,
I'm
is there.
Way off.
Yes.
I'm just making this up.
Cryptopharafoxa.
You can say what it means.
Can I tell you what that means?
Yes.
Do you know?
No.
This is my fun trivia for you.
Woo!
So Cryptopharafoxa, two words. That is their scientific name. It is actually translated to hidden anus.
Yes! And we have an episode title, folks.
It's like a super fun fact that like I try and tell people, but some people don't want to know.
You can definitely say anus on the Raw Safari podcast.
You can't say anus on television.
I think
on
it's
local television.
Listen, I was trying to share to the local triad what his scientific name meant, which is giving a science lesson, mm-hmm. first off, sharing priority information about the species because it has meat. I mean, it has purpose. And Becca was not a super fan of me trying to do that.
I am amazed she let you on my podcast. Although actually I'm not, because Becca knows the podcast really well and knows that there is no better place in the science communication world to talk about a hidden anus than on the Raw Safari podcast. I may rename the whole podcast the Hidden Anus Podcast
I'm
now.
I'm so fine with that.
So explain.
Yes. So a FOOSH or a FUSA FUSA or a FASA or a FUSA might actually has kind of, I think they call it a pouch of skin that covers the technical anus. And in there is basically scent glands. So this is like a super scent oriented animal. I mean, they have glands on their wrists, on the back of their wrists, also at their anus. And so they are all about scent marking, going around their territory. And so if you ever come to the Science Center or if you go to a facility with a FUSA, make sure you try to look. And it is like a pouch of a tan skin that covers and you can't actually see the actual anus.
That's amazing.
It's really cool.
I really want to go look at your FUSA's butt right now.
I know. It's pretty neat. It's pretty neat.
That's really cool. Oh my goodness. So, wow, that is a fun fact indeed. But tell me more. Tell me more about just this individual.
Just Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff.
Jeff.
Yes, because there is no better name for a FOOSH than Jeff.
There
I love
really
it so
is
much.
Not.
Perfection.
I also call him Jeff Jeff. If you can't tell, I love, I don't know why, I love duplicating names.
That's really funny.
So Jeff came from us from San Diego, which was really awesome. And so I got a lot of really cool information about how they kind of worked his schedule and everything. Jeff himself is 10 years old. He is a male. He's never been bred. He was in a breeding situation. Unfortunately, the female didn't particularly find him that interesting. So he did not have any luck in that department. And so he came to us, as we are not a breeding facility for FUSAs. And he's just kind of a cool dude.
Nice. So I need to pause you for a second. We'll come back to Jeff. But so was this, do you know if Jeff was at the base camp, like the wilderness base camp over in San Diego on exhibit there? Do you happen to know that offhand?
He was not on exhibit.
Okay. So he was not.
I'm not sure of what the wilderness base camp is.
It's their newest exhibit. It's just like one of their, so yeah, no. Okay. So he was not an exhibit animal.
He was an off exhibit animal.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Interesting. So how has he taken to being an on exhibit animal?
I would definitely say it's been an adjustment for sure. I think kind of the transport for him, as far as I'm aware, he was born and raised in San Diego. So also think of their climate is quite different than ours.
Oh my God, I love San Diego's climate.
And we also received him during the winter as well.
Okay.
So this has been a bit of an adjustment for him. He seems to be doing pretty well with the temperatures, at least. I let him out in the mornings and he honestly seems to be kind of patrolling, sniffing around the brisk air of North Carolina, not the hot air of California. But overall, I think on exhibit, he is a pretty standard FUSA of the really elusive. So if you, I'm sure, remember Ronnie, who we had, he was a really hard one to see.
Yes.
And so Jeff has really followed in that same footsteps as Ronnie.
I have not seen Jeff yet. We went and looked for Jeff and I have not seen Jeff. I have not had a chance to look for a hidden anus or any other part of his
so
cute little FUSA body. Because,
need to look at the paws, too.
Yeah, why is that?
Being the weasel fanatic I am, FUSAs have little, very adjacent to weasel paws. So they are really manipulative. They like hold their food items. And they also have like the flexible wrists so they can hang literally upside down, which is super crazy. Cause they just look like a cat and a cat doesn't hang upside down off of a tree branch, you know, like that's just wild. And his paws are just big.
Nice. Well, hopefully someday I'll get to see you.
Yeah, I know. Come in the morning or the afternoon.
So are there any like temperature restrictions for Jeff? Like when he can be out and in and all that? How does that work?
So kind of like all the animals here, everybody has temperature guidelines just to make sure you're in the species parameters. So for him, he can have what we call access, which is access to his indoor and outdoor space at 40 degrees. I have been giving it a few degrees under lately, just getting him kind of acclimated a bit more as he's been doing really well. Ronnie's temp was a little lower than his just because he obviously was here for a long time.
Right.
He was pretty comfortable with it. And then his lock inside would technically be anything below 40. And so when I say lock inside, that just means keep them inside of their heated holding space until temperatures get a little bit warmer. And then their what we would call lock out temperatures would be 50 or above. So lock out just means that we can have him locked off his indoor holding space with the heat and he can be on exhibit because it's nice and sunny.
Okay, cool. Now, is Jeff protected contact or free contact? Or?
He is protected contact. Okay. I would not want to be in the same room as Jeff.
Why would you not want to be in the same room as Jeff?
Jeff is super motivated for some food.
Okay.
Yes. He's also super motivated anytime you kind of come into the room. He's kind of at attention and he's like, oh, what are you going to do? So he would definitely be an individual that would be all over you if you were in the same room as him.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, fair. So what kind of training do you do with Jeff?
We actually do quite a bit. When he came, his behavior repertoire was a little hard to figure out. So we've been kind of starting from scratch in a way, and also just building the relationship. So we do a lot of voluntary medical procedures. So we're working on him presenting both of his paws. One seems to be a bit of a struggle for him. We do kind of like target, which is pretty standard, up, down. I'm working on a shoot behavior with him. So shoot behavior, he's going into a PVC pipe, which would allow for a hand inject behavior. Mm-hmm. He's been doing really well on that so far. So we're kind of working on some fun behaviors.
Well, that sounds really cool. And I'm assuming that being food motivated probably helps with all of that.
Yes. He's very enthusiastic for training, which is really fun because Ronnie was a little eh.
Gotcha.
He was kind of like, oh, I'll do it when I want to.
So what do you use for the food motivators?
So Jeff, I call them his little training treats. So specifically right now I'm training him with some deer.
Oh, nice.
Yes, which is kind of like it is not in his daily diet. So it's an extra item that is a novelty for him. So I'm using this because we really are at the base of training. So I'm trying to get him, again, we're building our personal relationship. And then also just we're doing a bunch of new behaviors at once. So that is kind of something that we're building. And so using a novel item is really helpful for that.
I really like that. So I'm curious because obviously, you know, Ronnie was a feature here and everybody was a big fan. I was a big fan. What has that transition been like for you?
For me personally?
Yes.
It's been difficult. It's definitely been an interesting one. I have had other animals leave my string. So I had the Gibbons, and anybody knows, we had Duke. And then we had Leela, the children of the parent couple that we have currently. And I have actually helped in their transport to another facility. But I have not personally on my string received an animal in replacement. So it's kind of like one of those things of like you say goodbye to an animal you've been caring for years that you love. But it's been interesting to receive in replacement. Because Ronnie left us for a breeding recommendation in Houston, which is super awesome. I'm really happy for Ronnie. And so that in itself has been my own kind of personal adjustment of like, I've said goodbye to my secret favorite animal. I actually love all of my animals equally, I will say.
We have a rule on this podcast. You can't say you don't have a favorite because everyone does has to lie about it to the public. So I'm with you on this. I'm with you. It's fine.
I will say I have favorites of each species.
I get that.
Yeah, because, I mean, how can you, I don't know, I have a hard time having one overall.
Right.
But, so I think in receiving a new one, it's been really difficult to try to learn Jeff as his own individual without comparing him so much to Ronnie, because obviously they're two separate individuals. Mm-hmm. However, from the same species, so there's going to be some overlap. I mean, Fooses are high energy. They're motivated for things. They're sleepy. But at the same time, like Ronnie wasn't that interested in training all the time. It would be, again, more on his if he'll come and participate. But Jeff, super amped up, super ready and willing to participate. So that in itself has been a more learning curve for me because I need to be more ready for Jeff.
Right.
I need to have more behaviors lined up for Jeff because he might be able to have a larger repertoire. And even just their personalities of things that they might have preference to, especially food. Mm-hmm. Fooses are picky. And Ronnie did not like rodents. Jeff loves rodents. So it's just one of those things that you have to learn them over time.
Right. No, that's cool. That's actually, I mean, you know, obviously not in a zoological setting, but I you know, a couple months ago said goodbye to my puppy of almost 15 years.
Oh,
she was
gosh.
My best friend. I loved her. And, you know, we have other dogs. And in particular, we had gotten a dog and they overlapped for some months. Mm-hmm. And I was just, you know, I said goodbye to Lexi. And it was especially after saying goodbye to Lexi that I realized that I just wasn't like, I love Flam and something wasn't landing and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I finally stepped back and just realized that I was expecting Flam to be Lexi. Now, Lexi was the chillest long-haired chihuahua that has ever existed.
Oh my gosh.
And Flam is a puppy mini Aussie.
Oh boy.
So like just there is nothing those two have in common.
Yeah.
They're not even different breeds at this point. They are different species. I don't care what science says, right? Like
fully agree.
And when I finally got out of my own head a little bit and started to except Flam is Flam, mm-hmm. our relationship got a million times better.
Yes.
And I love her so much, and I miss her now that I'm on this trip and everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I totally get that, because it was just me projecting Lexi onto Flam, which yes. isn't fair. It would be like if you did that in a relationship or whatever. Yeah. You can't just do that, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
interesting. I think being a keeper, I think one of the things is that we are almost expected, and we kind of tell ourselves too, like, these animals are here for a purpose, and we are here for a purpose in order to take care of them and to provide them with the highest welfare. And then you do get attached, you know? And so whenever you have these breeding recommendations, again, it's amazing that Ronnie finally had the opportunity to go represent his species. But at the same time, like, you are still heartbroken mm-hmm. at the end of the time, because for 5 days a week, really 7 days a week, because you think about it all the time, like, you're caring for his entire life. So it's one of those things about this job that I don't think a lot of people think of, is the attachment aspect that we get to these animals, even though we're not playing with them, we're not doing the things that a lot of guests might think.
Right.
We're just taking care of them and giving them this awesome life. Definitely a different aspect.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think it's one of the things that I find the most amazing about y'all, especially at a smaller facility, mm-hmm. is like, you will go and say goodbye to your heart animal because yeah. it needs to be euthanized, and then immediately have to leave the building and go take care of the other 15, 20 animals yeah. on your string, whatever it may be. Whereas, like, when Lexi passed,
yeah.
I took an entire day on the couch, and then really took about 3 months where everything was a daze for me. I yeah. was just like, you know, and I know that it's, you can get somewhat used to it when it is your job, but at the end of the day, like, you just have to keep doing the
you
thing.
You have to move on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is, that's tricky.
It is tricky know? For sure.
Yeah.
Regardless of it's just saying goodbye or losing an animal that's passing, or a transport, like for Duke, mm-hmm. losing him was really hard for me. So yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, let's talk about another animal on your string.
Mm-hmm.
Pick and choose. Tell me something.
Well, I don't know. I feel like people sleep on the flamingos and people sleep on the gibbons. So
I would imagine that sleeping on those animals, it would be uncomfortable, especially the flamingo. Oh, I see.
Oh, I got you. Yeah,
I took you literally.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, okay. So let's talk about the gibbons.
Okay. We can talk about some gibbons. So we have Javan gibbons.
Right, because they like coffee. Go on.
Of course. I mean, they act like they like coffee. Come on now. So we're actually super cool because we're one of, I believe it's three currently institutions in the United States that have Javan gibbons.
That's very cool.
So it's really rare in the United States to see them. There's not a whole lot of facilities worldwide either. So for people coming to the Science Center, I think that's a really fun fact that a lot of them don't know,
mm-hmm.
is that they're actually seeing a species that they're not going to see somewhere else.
Right.
Unless you're going to, I think, Indiana. Just on a whim. So the gibbons we have currently are Leon and Bella. They are a mated pair. And so they've been together for, I think, 14-ish years now. So a long time.
Yeah, that's amazing.
They're both about 20. So for the majority of their time, they've had two offsprings, Leela and Duke, who, as I said, are currently at other facilities now, starting their own family groups, which is super exciting. Yeah, so these guys are actually lesser apes. They're not monkeys. I feel like I should speak that louder into the mic. They're not monkeys. So anyone coming here, you can tell your children the difference between a monkey and an ape. Easiest identifier, no tail.
No tail.
There yep. you go, no tail.
Literally, walking through the zoo today with Becca, we heard somebody be like, making monkey noises around.
Yes.
And Becca's like, they're apes. They're not. What is happening? Like, I know.
Some people are really up in arms about that debate. For me, I understand that not everyone is educated about mm-hmm. the difference of an ape and a monkey. So I think it's a really fun opportunity. If I hear someone say monkey, I'll be like, they're actually apes. If you wanted to know, look for a tail. Yeah. So I think that's kind of a fun little tidbit that you can like walk around a zoo and be like, they're an ape. Yeah. So they're lesser apes because they're tiny.
Right.
That's just my easy way of saying it. Mm-hmm. They're not great apes because they're not great in size.
Right. In all other ways.
In all other personality aspects, they would consider themselves a great ape.
Yes. The red panda community gets very upset about the fact that they're also known as lesser pandas when in fact they are the only real panda and also are not lesser to anything ever.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. That is, there's a whole lot of that online.
Coach I'm like, panda.
Calm down, guys. Calm down. Everything's fine. Life is fine.
Gotta love it.
Oh boy. But so I don't think we've ever had gibbons discussed on here.
Ooh,
maybe once, because I think they are at Indianapolis. Is that
Fort Wayne?
Is it Fort Wayne? Okay, then I'm wrong. And we've definitely never had this discussion.
Okay.
So can you give kind of just an overview of the species?
Yeah, for sure. So the Javan gibbons specifically are endemic to the island of Java. Or Isle of Java. I never know how to say that. And so that's in Indonesia. So they are obviously kind of an Asian species. And so these guys are not kind of structured like you would think of your great apes, where they live in huge family groups. There might be little pods of families in that larger group. They actually live in their own territories of their own family group. So that is another reason why there's not that many facilities with all of them, because one family group of gibbons is one exhibit. So they would all have to have their own separate territory. They can't live cohabitly together.
Right.
So we have obviously kind of the mom, dad, and then they'd have their offsprings. And when the offsprings kind of became of age, they'd almost get booted out and they'd start their own territory. So there's about 20 species of gibbons. So a lot of those species are known for their songs.
Okay.
So a really common gibbon that you might see in other facilities is Siaming.
Yes.
Siaming, I think I said it right.
Siaming, yeah.
Siaming. Yes. And so you would hear their songs. They have really, really loud ones. So the Javan gibbon is actually one of the species that does not have its own song, which again is a really unique trait.
Oh, wow. That actually is really. So I have been to the Gibbon Conservation Center in California and did an interview there, and it was awesome. And yeah, no, like the song, like I think half the interview was about
their songs.
Wow, that's interesting that they don't sing.
Yes. So they have, I won't necessarily try and imitate it, but it's almost like a whoop sound.
You should probably try and imitate it.
You can do it. That is literally like a gibbons in the room.
That's amazing.
I can't.
Thank you, Becca. Becca the gibbon.
I can't describe it any better than that. Thank you so much. So that is actually classified under like research as an alarm call.
Okay.
And so the Javan gibbon kind of like wakes up every morning and they'll survey their surroundings. And then they kind of use this whoop call to their family members as more of a like, hey, it's like a locator of like, where are you at? I'm here. That's awesome. You're there. And then also like, oh, hey, this tree looks different than yesterday. Maybe we should go investigate it. And that the whole time they're kind of communicating with these little whoops. And so these large whoops kind of form their, I guess you could say, quote unquote, song, even though it's not classified a song, because it is really just kind of like an alarm sound.
No, that makes sense. And I actually, from that interview, have learned a lot about gibbon song. Mm-hmm. And I know that was a couple years ago now. So for people listening, newer listeners who might not have heard that, without going into too much detail, normal gibbons that have song, again, not what we're talking about, it is very complex. And it is very much like musical theory in like the human world. Mm-hmm. Like it is startling. And you can go back and listen to that episode and hear all of the ways that like they're explaining to me like what happens in gibbon song. And I'm literally saying, and in my career as a professional musician, we call that or it is this. It is really astonishing. So I see why it's not a song for those listening now. It is a very different thing. Mm-hmm. Although I assume that if it was a song, it would be whoop, there it is. Anyway.
I just got that. That took me a second. That was really good.
This is why the listeners keep coming back. No. Yeah. And so that's very interesting. Yeah. Actually, I need to go talk to Kelly at some point and tell her that everything I told her about the Gibbons song yesterday does not apply to the Gibbons here, because we had a whole talk about it. And,
oh,
and yeah, and she needs to know that's not your monkeys. Kidding. I know they're not monkeys. I'm kidding.
Oh,
literally just did that
gosh,
for the face.
My face just psyched out. I was like, he did not.
I'm such a troublemaker. No, that's really cool. So, all right. And then flamingos.
Yep. Gotta
flamingos.
Love those flamingos.
They're weird, weird, weird little legs and all of that.
Uh-huh,
so
uh-huh.
let's talk about the flamingos here. The flock.
The flock. The flock of the flams. Also known as the flamily.
The flamily! Okay, so one of my dogs is named Flam, which is a drum thing.
Okay.
And so we might just have to be the Flamily now.
There you go.
That's
it is
amazing.
My favorite term. I can't take credit. Shout out to Keeper Megan. She came up with Flamily when I sent her a family photo of me and them. So, you know, it's a thing. But the flams themselves, I should say Caribbean flamingos, they are the most hilarious thing on the planet to work with. I mean,
really?
That's when I say people are sleeping on flamingos. Just stand and watch them for 2 seconds and you are watching a soap opera. It is absolutely drama central all the time, but yet they're like that one big happy family. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's
talk about it. Go into it more. Like, this is great.
It's really great. So, here at the Science Center, we have 16 in our flock. We actually have 14 males and 2 females, which again, a lot of people aren't aware of. And so a lot of the questions that I get of like, oh, are they going to breed and are they going to have babies kind of thing? And I'm like, well, actually, flamingos are super specific and their breeding requirements, which again, you wouldn't really think about. So they actually physiologically matter to have a male to female ratio in order to breed in a flock.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So our flock has all the capabilities. They have all the resources to breed, but they don't because we only have 2 females.
Okay.
It also matters on the amount of rain you get per year, which is just crazy to me.
Yeah.
Their breeding season also usually revolves around rain.
Hmm.
So you might think it's a certain couple months and then if it could pour and then all of a sudden you're seeing some crazy behaviors happening. So in our flock, another fun thing about them is even though it is 14 to 2, every single one of them is paired up in a couple.
Oh, really?
And so they stay in this couple. And I'm pretty sure as long as these birds have been together, the majority of them have stayed in the same pairing.
Okay.
So I could literally tell you every bird's name right now, and I could tell you who they're with, and I could tell you the drama about them.
That's amazing. So I just want you to clarify, though.
Yeah.
So when you say they're paired up,
yes,
are we talking about just like homosexual relationships, or are we talking more of a like not romantic thing? Or I'm just genuinely curious about what this is here.
So I would say they definitely go through the breeding behaviors. They do not physically, I have personally not physically seen them breed with each other. I have only seen our male-female couple try to breed with each other. However, our male-male couples build nests together.
Okay.
They protect their nests. They kind of go through every other behavior that a male-female mated couple would do.
Right. That's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool, actually. And I find it super fascinating to watch because they're really particular about kind of their mates. And if a flamingo gets separated from their mate for literally, this is where they're dramatic, for literally like 30 seconds, one's 3 feet away from the other one, they'll start locating calling to try and find each other.
Wow.
In the crowd.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's yeah, that's crazy. Wow. That's really interesting. I love that so much. Mm-hmm. Also, new reality show idea. Just putting this out there. Becca, get this on your local TV, right? My big gay flamily. Like, come on. Come on. We could do this. It's North Carolina. Oh, never mind.
Oh my gosh.
North Carolina.
Hobbles could be the star, and he could, because he was a part of a throuple.
Oh,
that is a thing. Oh, yes, okay. That is a thing. And Chad was so interested, and then he left Elton. I mean, we're talking.
And their names are Chad and Elton. Come on, this is my big gay family. We're doing this. Hubble, Chad, and Elton. I am obsessed with this show right now.
It's actually the Chad, legally.
The Chad.
Yes.
The Chad. Yes. Okay. I love this so much. So obviously, we can't go through all of them by name and drama.
Yes. Yes, yes.
But can you tell me one story? It might just be more about the thruple, but just give me something.
So I guess we can elaborate on the thruple since I mentioned them.
So happy right now.
So in our flock of 16, I mentioned that everybody has a pairing. However, there are two birds. Hobbles is a bird that will not have a pairing. And so he unfortunately has left Kelly out in the wind. So Kelly is like this waiting for Hobbles to notice him kind of deal. Except Hobbles is not that interested in Kelly, except lately they've kind of been a thing.
Ooh.
Which again, development, I know.
But Kelly's putting the work in.
Going to the thruple. So Chad was really interested in Hobbles. Hobbles during breeding season is a really dominant male. He's displaying constantly. He's calling constantly. So I think that really caught Chad's eye. And so Chad was starting to leave Elton, who Elton and Chad have been together, I mean, a really long time. And so Chad started to see Hobbles. Hobbles was like, I mean, I guess you can kind of stand around me. So Chad was kind of standing around Hobbles, but of course Elton, Chad's his man. So, I mean, he would hang out, and then it kind of ended up being this like, okay, we can protect our little area. And they became a thruple for quite a bit of time until Hobbles, obviously being the show off that he is, was like, I'm too good for you.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah. Elton. Yeah. Ouch.
It's a lot. Right.
Wow. That is amazing though.
It is.
I love that so much.
It is.
Does Kelly know that there's a flamingo named Kelly?
Yeah.
Did she name the
I named it.
After Kelly?
Yes, because it has two black bands, and it's her opinion, the prettiest bird. My opinion, he's not the prettiest bird. He is the brightest bird who keeps his colors all year long as vibrant, and also double black leg band like her soul.
So you named a flamingo after the love of this podcast's life, Kelly Roush, the keeper here, because of the double black band that is like her soul. I could not love this more. I was like, why is Becca interrupting with a thing that won't make the podcast? And this is clearly going in the podcast because
there's a little bit of a tension between Laura and
Kelly. Yes. Oh, I have to preface, Kelly and I are really good friends. I'm saying that now. However, Kelly gets so much attention.
You know Kelly's awesome, right? I'm not saying you're
aware.
Not awesome.
I'm aware. I'm just saying
that Kelly is
incredible. Awesome. But I'm just like, I don't know, maybe share some love here, you know? There's more awesome people in the world other than Kelly. And you know what? She would love that we're talking about her right now. See, that's the thing.
I've been thinking about Kelly for half of this interview. I haven't even heard. No, I'm kidding.
There you
I'm
go.
Kidding.
That's how it is for me.
You know, when I told Laura that she was going to be on the podcast, I said, you know, John's coming down to interview. I'd love to have you, you know, on the podcast. And then I said, but also he came down to interview Kelly and Jen.
It's true. And they're going to run back to back.
I was like, okay, thank you for just nailing that right in there.
I mean, if you're on like three more times and you have caught up with Kelly,
okay.
She's Jeez. Always on this podcast.
Don't even get me started on the news interviews.
Well, look, some people talk about hidden anuses and some people don't.
Well,
I'm just saying.
I'm trying.
You talk about butts on here.
I sure did. And you know what?
You hear me saying that.
Amazing. No, I get that though. It's like, yeah, it's just that, you know, you deserve your moment too. And now you're getting to have it.
Thank you.
Yay!
Thank you.
And I might even say nice things about you in the intro or outro, especially if we can like, I don't know, go see some of your animals at some point. Just saying. Cause like Kelly takes me to her animals. I'm just saying.
Well, nobody's ever interested in my little guys.
How can you not be interested in all of the animals you're talking about? They're all amazing.
Thank you. That is exactly my thought.
I'm just saying. Foosh alone are just incredible, but
All right. Hidden gems.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else that you want to talk about before we get to the last couple of questions here?
I mean, I'm personally, I've just accepted a position as an SSP coordinator.
For what?
Stud bookkeeper.
For what? For
the Prevost squirrel.
Oh my gosh.
I know that's like a really niche thing.
I love them so much.
Thing.
No, they're so cool.
Really?
Okay, so one of my favorite exhibits in the whole world, and we were actually talking about this before, but we like binturongs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes, they're amazing animals. At Brookfield Zoo, they have this incredible binturong habitat.
Mm-hmm.
It is huge. And to me, binturongs don't smell like popcorn. They smell like corn chips more. Like it's
okay.
The same world, but it's a
I
little bit more
that.
Like
yeah,
a
yeah.
Fritos type thing, right? This exhibit smells like they are popping popcorn. It is the one thing, like it smells like a movie theater to me.
Okay.
And in that building, it's this huge, like deep crevasse that you look down into uh-huh. and there's netting. It's very cool. In that building, there is also a huge Prevost squirrel exhibit
nice.
Where there's tubing running all along. So you can be standing and looking at binturongs and turn behind you and there can be a squirrel running back and
oh,
forth.
That's
and
cool.
It is one of my favorite places in any facility anywhere.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're just really cool squirrels.
They
that's
are really,
really
cool.
Cool
squirrels. Yeah.
Well, congrats.
Thank
that's
you.
Very cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you been doing it long? I know you said you just accepted, but.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Cool.
I'm absolutely brand new to this entire population management side. It's something that I'm really interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Just like from my roots of like, I really believe that zoos are here for a purpose mm-hmm. of eventually a repopulation or for some species, that's something that we're able to do now,
mm-hmm.
which is so cool. But yeah, this is kind of my foot in the door and to try and do my best for these squirrels because, again, underrated animal, squirrels.
Yeah, they're amazing. They are amazing.
Yeah.
One other question before we get to wrapping it up, which is just this. What is your favorite animal, can be individual or species, here that you don't work with?
Bum, bum, bum. I can give you my favorite that's crept up on me currently.
Okay. That's fair.
How about that?
Yeah, that works.
So I think you're also going to love this answer. The binturongs.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, I was really fortunate in helping hand rear those guys. And ever since then, I've had a deeper appreciation. And then I'm on the same team as Macy. And so I've really been fortunate to like work closer with them. And their personalities are just so fun. And again, self-proclaimed love weasels.
Mm-hmm.
They are some weaselly little bear cats. I mean, they just resemble so closely with a Fusa
mm-hmm.
and just weasel, mustelid, all these things. And so I think I started looking at them a little differently. And that's been right now. Again, I'm a favorite across the board kind of person. But yeah, I think they're super cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, I love bints, obviously.
Yeah.
They are not just on my, you've seen my computer sticker, but my logo for the podcast has a binturong on
yeah.
it, which is also my tattoo. I mean, like, I'm obsessed. Yeah,
yeah,
they are amazing. I have a stuffed binturong in my backpack right now. So just saying.
I love it.
Yeah. So that's very cool. All mm-hmm. right. And then is there a conservation organization you'd like to give a shout out to?
Yes. So I am, again, weasel girl. How many times am I going to say that? So really love black-footed ferrets and like the really cool conservation around them. So you can go to blackfootedferret.org to get some more information on that.
Awesome. Sounds great. Yeah. I know they do amazing work. So I'll look into repopulation stuff. That's
yeah.
so cool. Everybody go check it out. It's time now, don't you know? We've come to the end of the show. But there's one tale left to go. You're gonna laugh and say, oh no. It's time for the Rastafari poop story.
Okay. I have one that I think you will appreciate, knowing your loves here. So I was really fortunate again to help hand rear the red panda cubs that we have.
They're amazing.
They are amazing. And there was specifically one time that Miso, being Miso, I was currently trying to feed Miso. Of course, the twins going crazy.
They do that.
What can you expect? just to clarify, they were very young at this age.
They still go crazy.
Yes, they exactly. They were just as crazy then. So they were going crazy, rustling, tussling. Miso was like, I need a break right now. I'm not finishing this food. So I gave her a little break, sat her down. If anyone watched us hand rear, obviously, you know that we had to stimulate our cubs mm-hmm. in order to get them to pee and poop. And so Miso did not need that. She was like, I am a queen of going to the bathroom on my own. So she went off in the corner and started making a face at me. And I was like, interesting. And I didn't quite know at the time that she was making the poop face. And so she went and pooped. So I tried to pick her up and I was going to retry finishing her bottle. And then I noticed that I had poop on me. And I said, okay, I think that you just went in the corner and pooped. But the second that I lifted my head to see her poop pile, Azula was already barreling through the poop. And literally, and Miso didn't just poop in one spot. She trailed pooped. Like, she would walk in poop. And so I literally was staring at Azula, sprint Zuko immediately after her. I'm by myself, by the way. I am just my only person taking care of them at this point. And I was like, slow motion movie. No. Like, literally, Azula goes through the poop and not only tracks in the original pile of poop, but then goes in all of Miso's dots of poop. So then I have to put Miso down at this point, who also still covered in poop. And then Azula, I mean, paw prints covering the room, covering me, covering everything. Then, of course, what does she do? Tackle Miso. So Miso has poop not only on her behind because I need to clean her up because that's what we do, but she has poop covering her body. And then Zuko still going crazy and Azula literally running through all of the tracks she's already done. And I actually sat there for a second because I was just so overrun by them. And I had to accept my fate that I was about to spend the next 30 minutes. I mean, it was everywhere.
I love those three so much.
Like, it was really, really everywhere.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I love those three so much. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Ah, that's amazing. Well, thank you for taking the time to do this. It's been a blast.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me so much. This was super fun and awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, Becca, can we get Kelly for another one? Yeah. Just kidding.
Let me text her.
I'm leaving right now. Okay, so if you ever come, you can see this is really actually easily identified for Bella. She has that black V on her belly.
Oh, yeah, she does.
I haven't seen a lot of other females actually with this trait, so I'm wondering if it's like kind of with her genetic line, because her daughter Leela, when she was leaving, actually was developing the V, which is really crazy.
Interesting.
Yes.
So it's like a lowercase V compared to...
Right? Actually, it was. It was a there lot smaller.
That works. I like
maybe
it.
Maybe over time she'll get there. And then also, the females seem to be more, don't feel bad, Bella, a little more pot-bellied.
Nah.
And just their body length is also shorter.
Interesting.
Whereas Liana, if you come over here, he's like super long.
Yes,
and
he is.
Lengthy.
Yes.
And his torso is really flat. And so they're just like really thin and lean. And usually I call them manes or crowns. That is by far not the significant or scientific term at all. But I call them their little crowns. The males seem to have like a much larger crown around mm-hmm. their head, and the females tend to be like a more of an egghead, whereas the guys are very like, oh, hello, I am majestic. So that's like a really easy way if you ever come back to, I know you will come back.
Yes,
to,
obviously.
Identify them. Yeah.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. And is what I'm smelling right now the plant, the gibbon, or the zookeeper?
Are you smelling an ammonia you smell?
Yeah.
I just touched spedding.
Oh, that'll do it.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
I honestly was in there and it was so overwhelmingly strong that I had to put it outside.
Okay, so it's a zookeeper. I mean, I wasn't even saying that as a joke because I know how that works.
It's genuinely me at this point.
That's really funny. That works.
So
have you ever had and I'm asking because I've had the story on my podcast before, but your husband, is he ever like, oh, honey, I love you, but I'm not giving you a hug right now?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Almost every single day I come home, he's like, don't touch me, go shower.
Yes, I had a keeper share that one time she got home from
work, and she like was like feeling risque, and so stripped down for her husband, and he's like, great, take that to the shower and then we will talk. And
that's hilarious.
That's fair.
No, it is a really stinky for sure.
Yeah,
and I actually don't like to sit down on any of my furniture in these clothes.
I get that.
Before I like bathe and like sterilize myself, just because I don't want to bring anything home.
Fair.
I just, it's just a nasty job.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Oh, yeah. They're such good gibbons though.
I know, he is.
They're so
He's munching
cute.
Down on, I think, a beet right now.
Okay.
So like they have some like top tier veggies, because obviously fruit, way better.
Yes.
But veggies, top would be pepper. Like they'll fight over a pepper.
Oh, wow.
For sure. Beet, and then anything steamed, but like carrot, sweet potato, beet steamed is like end all be all.
Okay.
Vegetable.
Interesting.
Also some celery sticks. I like to give them whole sticks. I actually give them a lot of whole items in general, just because in my brain, that's how they would function.
Yeah.
And they seem to really get eager into like grabbing the whole item, participating in like picking it apart, taking the rind off of fruit and stuff. I can give them whole corn husks.
Okay.
And they'll husk the corn.
Oh, cool.
And they'll eat it.
Nice.
Like, it's really neat to kind of watch them go through like.
Yeah, I like that. That's really cool. And like you said, that's what they would get.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. So for me, it's also like a part of enrichment of just like, I include that in like a daily diet, but it's different every time.
Right.
So, you know,
yeah,
something
makes sense.
Different. Okay.
Very
cool. Meet Jeff?
Yeah. Let's go see Jeff.
Oh, dear Lord.
No, just the smell is a lot.
It's
but yeah, I know how.
It's just that one thing, and it's been sitting here for the day, and it's overwhelming. And
wow.
he's a bedwetter.
Okay.
Yeah, big time. So just since you're in here, so I don't think you've been here.
No.
This is the gibbon side.
So okay.
Actually attached, even though it's two separate exhibits.
That's awesome.
So like this is his little cubby.
Mm-hmm.
And so then like what I said with the pathway.
Yep.
This is the same thing for inside.
The yellow line. It's always a yellow line.
It's actually, it never used to be, but it is now yellow.
Oh, interesting.
I think it used to be white. But yeah, that's kind of the gibbon side.
Hi, Jeff.
Mm. And I haven't trained your clothes or anything, so I thought you could watch training if you'd like.
That would be amazing.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, look at that belly.
Yeah, I'm a big rabbit today. So he's nice and full.
Hello. Hi, bud. Oh, my gosh. Hi, did you know that they call you a foosh over in England?
Because
yeah,
I do.
Oh, yes. My gosh.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Big stretch.
I have met many an animal, but I have not met a foosh yet.
Really?
So this is really special because I really like them.
He is really special, honestly.
Yeah. I'm a good boy.
He says, oh, come here. Come outside now. What are you doing?
Oh, ho, ho.
I think it's just like also their ability. Ronnie would climb way more than Jeff does. And Ronnie would traverse kind of like more like shaky perches.
Okay.
Jeff is a stable kind of boy. That's what I call him, a stable boy. But he's definitely getting like more comfortable with like moving things, which is really cool because he's kind of like developing that trait more.
Nice.
Just watching them scale such something or a tree is really, really wild. I feel special though because a lot of people don't get to see them as often. So working with them is so cool. He knows what we're doing.
Hi, buddy. You ready for some training? Hi. Hey, Jeff. You are amazing.
This is our
museum
right now.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God, you see it?
Wow, yeah.
That's a rare sighting.
You're hidden anus, but not a hidden penis.
Yes. Ronnie's never saw it until like the last week I was with him.
Mm.
And then Jeff, the first week I was with him, he whipped it out and I was like, oh my God. Hi. If you want, you're welcome to know. There's no pee here, I swear that's a pee. Yes. But you can just get a little bit of a better view of him.
Yeah.
Shift. So we're still, like I said, a little novice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of working through things. Hey, target. Good.
Oh, good target. Oh, my God.
So this is the deer. Shift.
There's a slightly different antecedent here. His name is John.
Target. This is the shoot we're trying to get comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Some days it's a win. Target. Shift.
Good shift, buddy.
stay.
A fun
one. Pop. Good.
Oh, it is a good pop.
And that is brand new, so he's doing really well with that. Not so good on the other one, though. Other pop. What was that?
Did you eat too fast, buddy? Oh my goodness. Look at that belly.
Look at
that belly.
Perfect stretch. Unpop. Pop. Good. It's actually really cool because Ronnie did the same thing. It's not usual for them to do it, but they actually up mirror. So if you see, he's giving me the opposite paw.
Yes.
So it's just a Fusa thing that I'm aware of.
Oh, interesting.
Like the tigers don't do it like a lot of the other carnivores. Shift. And the fact that Ronnie did it too, and then he came and he immediately started just taking things. Shift.
That is really interesting.
Yeah, it was, he did it. And I was like, oh my God, Carolyn, he mirrored his paw. Keep going. Shoot. This is a good one.
Yes.
Too far? I'm sorry. Shoot. Good.
Oh, look at you, big brave boy.
All done. Yeah, so I usually, like, end on a mouse or something just a little larger because this is all new. So I'm trying to, like, keep it really positive.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of see it's really good. At least I've worked with the two Fusas at this point. But, or Fusa, I feel like it's really
Fusa. Fusinators.
But they seem to be really easily distracted, one. So you have to really keep their attention and go quick with things. And if you get their attention, like, work on holding it. Otherwise, you might have some other behaviors.
Makes sense.
Hi, buddy.
Hi.
There's any more.
What you doing?
He doesn't even know.
He sure doesn't. They're just so cool. So cool. Does he smell really bad?
I mean, it doesn't smell great in here, but he doesn't smell... I mean, it's no worse than most, you know, lots of animals are stinky.
Yeah. Cut that out. Yeah. He is way stinkier, also way nastier than Ronnie ever was. Ronnie, I think, was not a real Fusa at this point. He's so clean.
Oh, wow.
So clean. And then Jeff came, pees in every single bed immediately, pees all over the logs, all over the ground. He does this thing that I call a ring dance, and he tinkles. Oh.
Ooh.
Some old food.
That's exciting.
He tinkles in a circle and then stamps his front and back feet. I'm not kidding.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not kidding. And then he goes like this in a circle. And I call it the rain dance.
That's amazing.
And he does it in the morning spot.
What a good boy.
And he'll also like yawn his mouth open when he's doing it.
That's so
it's
funny.
It's intense. He's staying warmer tonight. He's
Oh, that's exciting. Ooh, look at the eggs.
He actually is not like a huge egg fan. And so these are raw. And I'm going to try and see if I crack them open if you eat them.
Interesting.
I froze eggs, raw eggs, on a trash can the other day, and he actually ate them.
That's exciting.
He didn't do it before. So I'm curious if I just fully remove the shell aspect.
Right.
If he might go for it.
Interesting. And if not, you get to clean up a raw egg in the morning. Yay!
I know, the funnest thing ever. It just gets so sticky when it's raw. You know?
No, it's true. Yeah, I don't usually have to worry about it because I have a Labrador Retriever that will clean up any eggs that I drop.
There you go.
Gross boy.
Do you guys see the flap?
Yeah, no, totally. Totally hidden anus. I noticed it immediately.
Absolutely
hidden. I noticed it immediately. I was like, oh, is that a hidden anus? Yes, it is.
Such a fun secret fact.
It really is. I want to go for the eggs.
I know. I'm wondering if we will have a secret.
That's awesome. I'm so excited.
I am too. Oh my God, this opens up so many more avenues for him. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, no, he is making sure he gets every bit of it.
I'm wondering if it's a shell component.
It might be.
That's crazy.
What a good boy.
I'm so excited about the egg.
I know, that's honestly like a super huge accomplishment.
That's so cool.
We can do so much more with that now.
Well, I'm happy that you got to meet him.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm sorry that I'm like stealing your whole day. I will just stay here all day.
No, I don't think you need to. It's okay. Yeah. He's probably going to get a little amped if we stay any longer.
Okay, let's boogie. Goodbye, Jeff. Jeff, thank you.
You were awesome.
So excited.
You definitely met him in a good place.
Yes, that was good.
Meeting Jeff the Fusa was my favorite. That was so much fun, y'all. And the fact that he ate the eggs out of the shell was so cool. And I mean, he devoured those eggs. It is so cool to see a Foosh up close. And I am so thankful to Laura and, of course, the entire team at Greensboro for opening their doors and being so transparent and letting me see all the things and share them with y'all. So I realized that this episode went pretty darn long, but I hope y'all, you know, thought it was worth it, because I know I did. And we got to meet Jeff. Jeff is a Foosh. That was so cool. As were the Gibbons and all the other things. So yeah. Hey, I want to say thank you real quick to my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Schenk, Dr. Stephen Williamson, Barbara Bennett, and Jenny Owens. And last but not least, let me remind y'all that the word credits backwards is, wait for it, Steiderk.
The Ross Safari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Ross Safari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Ross Safari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.
Your MacBook is called Rossifony. Oh, no, that's your phone.
My phone is called Rossifony.
That's hilarious.